Sportscast. Another week has gone by. College championship week is over. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, and iTunes. And if you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. And visit us on thesportscast.net. A lot happening this week with coach hirings, coach firings, and some recruiting. The Pac-12 championship game. Oregon leaped out to a 20-point first-half edge over number 5 Utah and then held on in the second half, buoyed by the running of star running back C.J. Verdell. He had a huge 70-yard run, the longest against the Utes all season, gave the Ducks a two-score lead again, and they held on to beat Utah 37-15 at the Levi's Stadium this past Friday. Give them a berth to the Rose Bowl. And Ty Turner, a happy man this weekend. Welcome to the Sportscast.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Pretty good. Good game. Oregon dominated from the beginning. Huntley had no chance.
Let's say that again, sorry.
Oregon had a good game. Utah quarterback Huntley did not have a good game.
Hey, can you hear me fine?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
That's the question again. Sorry, I didn't hear you very good.
What was your reactions over the Pac-12 championship game this past Friday?
Okay, first I didn't understand your question. Okay, the reaction was I don't even know what to say. It was an absolutely terrific performance by Oregon. Obviously, Utah had so much on the line. The premise around the game was that this was Utah's chance. This is their chance to make the college football playoff, get the Pac-12 back to the college football playoff. And that was kind of what you were hearing mostly. At Oregon, you know, obviously had lost to Arizona State. And had their playoff, they dropped outside the top 10 to number 13. And so it was definitely built up as this is Utah's moment. And you weren't hearing really a whole lot about the Ducks.
No.
And I felt that. And you know, we did our podcast last weekend. And, you know, it's pretty harsh. And I eviscerated Justin Herbert. After his Arizona State performance, he also had a pretty meager performance against Oregon State. The media, it was definitely, all the talk was centered around Utah and were they going to make the playoffs. If they won and Georgia lost, they probably were going to get in. And you heard this whole narrative built around Utah, and you heard very little around Oregon. And they were kind of like the forgotten man, only at 2 weeks earlier, they were in number 5 or number 6, it was, in the college football playoff, and they were looking like they possibly were going to get in until the Arizona State lost. And all of a sudden, it totally had changed, and this is all around Utah. And I remember you asked me to do a prediction, and I kind of was like, who are you picking? You pick Utah, because I don't know why. Why did you pick Utah?
They had the momentum, but talent overcame momentum.
Well, I didn't ask you what happened. That's what I asked you. I said, why did you pick them?
I just saw the momentum. They had a lot to play for, okay. And they choked.
Yeah. I don't think they choked. I don't agree with that. I'll go into more. I don't agree with the choke. I don't like when people really run to someone choking. You do realize if you're playing another team, the other team just might play better or be better.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon was way more talented. On paper, was more talented, and they showed it.
I don't like the whole push. Like, you hear that. I even saw that online. It's like, Utah stinks. They choke. They were always overrated. No, Oregon's pretty good. But Oregon plays, I mean, if you go back and watch Oregon this season, watch them in the first half against Auburn. Watch them against USC. Watch them in the second half against Washington. Watch them the game against Utah. When Oregon was playing up to their ability, they were a top four team. Problem with Oregon this year is the consistency. It really is. And that's why they're not going to the college football playoff. Anyway, to go back to what I was saying. So as I asked you and you picked Oregon and you saw Utah, and I was kind of at this point a little annoyed at Oregon. So I was just like, you know what? I'll just go with your pick. But as the week went on and I was just hearing this push and I was like, his narrative, and I was just like, I don't know. Something was not – I'm like, something feels as if Utah – a couple things are going to happen. Utah probably won't play as good. And I will admit, Utah did not play as well. Some of that was possibly execution. A lot of it was Oregon. I mean, just what it was. A couple things. I'm like, if they don't execute well, maybe they're just a little bit off. And this Oregon team comes in with a chip saying, we're being overlooked. No one is giving us a chance. And the fact that I thought man-to-man, Oregon had the more talented roster. I mean, analytics show it. Team talent composite has Oregon at 17. They have Utah at number 47. So the little more talented roster with a chip on its shoulder, playing super motivated against a team that maybe is a little tight, maybe does not execute quite as well, maybe not playing as loose as they normally do. I saw a little bit of a problem, and I wanted to change my pick, but I didn't, because I'm like, you know what? I think if I have it this way, they'll end up winning Oregon. I just thought that, and that's what ended up happening. Because as the week went on, there's something about it that I was like, I think Oregon's going to win. I think they're going to all stomp Utah's. I didn't think stomp. Wouldn't have picked stomp. I did not think they were going to win. So
that's
easily.
A strong word.
And the game did get close. Obviously, it was 20-0, and it could have been worse. Honestly, a couple ill-timed off starts by Oregon down in the red zone made the red zone opportunities a little harder. Also, Oregon's receivers dropped 6 passes. So if it wasn't for a couple drop passes, a couple ill-timed penalties, I think Oregon could have possibly been up 27-0 or 30-0 at the end of the first half. I mean, the first half was not even close. Herbert was playing very well. He was running. He was on target with his passes, good decisions. The defense was on fire. Like, Utah couldn't really do anything. They got stopped on a couple fourth down opportunities. Oregon was running well. I mean, first half, Oregon really dominated. Second half, once again, the offense did a little bit like it's done all year for Oregon, and that's been a little inconsistent. And all of a sudden, a couple drop passes, you know, a couple missed blocks, a couple bad passes by Herbert. And all of a sudden, the offense wasn't doing a whole lot. Fumble that got them deep in their own territory. So it was a little worrisome second half because Oregon started not executing well. And then Utah did make a couple nice plays on their offense to score points on Oregon's defense. And they got within 8 points. And then they actually got the ball back. And they got, I think, slightly within Oregon's territory. If I remember, they got like the 48 or something. And it was a fourth down. And I'm like, is Whittingham going to go for it again or is he going to punt it? Well, he decided to punt it this time and give his defense, which hasn't played very well. They've not been giving up very much. He's pretty much put his defense out there and said, hey, go stop Oregon, give us the ball back, and we'll try to go back down the field and tie this game. C.J. Verdell hit a 70-yard touchdown run.
I saw that.
And when that happened, I think everyone in the stadium knew it was tough. And then I think a couple of series in Utah, basically he got sacked like 3 times. And then he ended up throwing an interception. Troy Dye picked. And then C.J. Verdell had another 35-yard touchdown run. And it ended up being 37-15. For the most part, other than a slight period in that third quarter, Oregon pretty much dominated that game. I actually thought 37-15. Sometimes you're like, the game was not as close as the score appears. It's like the game was closer than it appears. I thought that was a 54. I thought Utah was way too close for how the game actually looked like it was playing out. So, yeah, there you go. And so the Oregon Ducks finish 11-2, Pac-12 champions, number 6 in the college football playoff, and in the Rose Bowl. And what is probably, it's not probably, I think it is considered by most to be the best non-playoff game this whole season.
Which they're playing Wisconsin. Wisconsin that did well against Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin's good. Yeah, Wisconsin had not blown that game to Illinois where they got upset. Wisconsin probably would have been playing with a chance to make the playoff against Ohio State. So, yeah.
Back to the Utah game, who would you give the MVP to?
Oh, my goodness. A lot of guys. C.J. Verdell ran for 208 yards. Funny stat about C.J. Verdell. In two games this year, he rushed for 465 yards and six touchdowns. Washington State and Utah. The other 11 games, he rushed for 700 yards and four touchdowns. to say it lightly, C.J. Verdell definitely is a guy that can have huge games, but he also can have pretty marginal games. So, and that's kind of what he is. He runs hard, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of in his career. So he definitely had a huge game. He was the MVP. He was the MVP of the game. The other couple guys that you would consider MVP candidates was Brady Brees, who had a tackle for loss and a key interception. A tackle for loss on fourth down that gave Oregon the ball back. And he also had an interception that stopped a drive that at the beginning of the game that really stopped some momentum that could have been gotten back by Utah. And Kayvon Thibodeau, he had 2.5 sacks, 3 tackles for loss. He was just – Utah really was having trouble blocking him. They were having a very hard time blocking him. So I'd say those two guys. Also Troy Dye, who had an interception, and he made some key plays on defense. It was pretty good. A lot of defensive guys. Offense, I would probably say C.J. Verdell. Oh, Johnny Johnson III, the wide receiver, had a touchdown, and he had a huge catch for 30 yards over the defender's back. He played very well. If you remember, he had a huge game against Arizona State, almost single-handedly brought them back to victory, had a good game against Oregon State, and then had another good game against Utah. He comes back next year, and he's had an excellent year. Will probably be an all-Pac-12 sort of guy. Award season.
Justin Herbert had 193 yards, one touchdown. How would you rate Herbert's performance this game?
First half, he was phenomenal. He ran the ball well. I think he had sacked a couple times, so it made his stats not look as good. But I think where he carried the ball, I think he was 9 carries for 42 yards. And he ran better than any other game this season. And honestly, it was a wrinkle that opened up the offense. It honestly was. It showed you he should have been running probably all more this year. sorry, I was looking at something on my phone. But he was pretty good. Second half, he didn't do as well. Like I said, the offense kind of sputtered. Some guys dropped balls. Juwan Johnson is a guy, the Penn State guy, who was a grad transfer, and he was fine. He had a great game against USC, 3 touchdowns. He also had a good game against Arizona with a big, huge, big touchdown. But last couple of games, he dropped some balls. And in general, he probably had about 6 or 7 drops this season, like pretty bad drops where he should catch it. That I just found that he came to Oregon to try to raise his draft stock. He obviously had injuries. Missed the first game, 4 games due to injury. Then he just had trouble dropping the ball like he did at Penn State. I don't know, a little bit of a disappointment for him, I would say. And that was a problem. He dropped a couple. I think even Johnny Johnson dropped one. And Jalen Redd, Jalen Redd's kind of is a hybrid kind of gadget, kind of slot guy. Catches, takes reverses and jet sweeps. Takes short screens, catches some balls down the field, but sometimes he does have a little issue tracking the ball down the field, and he had a couple balls he should have caught. So that was probably a little problem that made Herbert's completion percentage a little lower. But honestly, Herbert finished the season 32 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, I think 3,500 yards passing, and 67% of his passes completed. I mean, you look at the stats, you look at the fact that they finished 11-2, they won the Pac-12, he did have a terrible performance against Arizona State, he didn't have a very good performance against Auburn in the second half, so a couple of their losses definitely fell that little bit back on his play. But as a whole, Justin Herbert, you lead your team to a Pac-12 title, and he played pretty good in the Pac-12 title game, especially in that first half. He had a pretty solid game. So I think Justin Herbert will probably have helped his draft. He probably will have stabilized his draft stock a little bit. He also made a couple really nice passes, too. And if he can win the Rose Bowl against a very good defense in Wisconsin, I think he'll firm up his – probably fall. I think ultimately he gets picked in the top 10.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I think he's going to end up showing out too good in his interviews, and I think his workouts, and I think he's a high-character guy. And his production was definitely good enough. I think he ends up being a top 10 draft pick.
Yeah.
I think Oregon, this is an early projection, I think Oregon lands a top 10 draft pick 3 years in a row. I think they land it this year, next year, and the year after.
That's not bad. Not bad for Oregon.
Yeah,
knows how to recruit quarterbacks.
Well, no, not for quarterbacks. No, not top 10 for quarterbacks. Oh. I think they finished it was top 10 for Herbert this year. I think they Penei Sewell is a top 10 NFL pick in 2021, and I think Kayvon Thibodeau is a top 10 pick in 2022.
What impressed you from Utah?
That was not Utah's best game. Not a whole lot. I've seen Utah play. Utah is a very disciplined team, a well-coached team, a very experienced team. They had 9 starters that were seniors on defense. They had a senior starter at quarterback, senior starter at running back. They were kind of what I thought, and I always – you know what? Talent doesn't lie.
No. You proved it again,
and
Tyler.
I always thought the biggest issue was the fact that they just lacked elite talent, especially if injuries happen. And Julian Backman, who's probably going to be an all-Pac-12 safety, he'll probably play in the NFL, he hurt his knee in the first half. And immediately after, they bring in his replacement, and like a few plays later, Justin Herbert completes a 45-yard touchdown pass over his backup. And that is where talent becomes an issue. If you have a guy, a starter go down, the guy who replaces him is just not near as good. I even remember back when Oregon didn't have as much talent. I remember they'd have like one of their starters or one of their better players go down, and then the backup, you would be immediately like this massive drop off. And you'd be like, are you kidding me? It's like, wow, that's like, polar opposite. Like, you have a star there and you have a guy that probably shouldn't be starting. And when you get more talented guys, and I saw that with this Oregon team, especially on defense, where you saw guys get hurt or something happen, and the backup would come in and be sometimes better. Like, if something happened to the starting corners for Oregon, D'Amador Lenore and Thomas Graham, Mikhail Wright, the backup, I think is better than them. So it's like, okay, who cares? Who cares to get hurt? Bryson Young, the starting outside linebacker, if he got hurt, Mesa Funa came in. I think he's better than him. Gus Cumberland went out for the season. Who came in to replace him? Kayvon Thibodeau. So, I mean, that's why you have to get talent, because it adds depth. And you also have to try to have 80 to 85 guys. So the fuller your roster is with more talented guys, the better your chances if injuries happen. And so, yeah. But overall, this season is no matter how you want to pay it, there's been a couple pictures. But this was a successful season for Oregon. They came in preseason number 11. The media picked them to win the North, but actually lose the Pac-12 title to Utah, believe it or not. And they came out and they finished 11-2. They finished number 6 in the country. They won the Pac-12. It was a very successful season by Oregon. They didn't quite make the college football playoff. And that's unfortunate, because I think they're actually better than Oklahoma. You know what? It is what it is. And I don't think they would have beat – they would do this year. So I think they'd go and they'd lose. I think LSU's better. So instead, they get to go to the Rose Bowl. And I think there's a good chance that they beat Wisconsin. And it's not going to be an easy game. Wisconsin's is a more talented. It's very kind of like Utah. Wisconsin's not as talented as Oregon, but Wisconsin's a little more talented than Oregon. Sorry, than Utah. My bad. Than Utah. And they have better running backs than Utah. Jonathan Taylor is one of the best running backs in the game. They have a better offensive line than Utah. They have guys that are going to play in the NFL. So I think they're a little better team than Utah. And I think they're a team that, you know, if you had an 8-team playoff, I think Wisconsin would belong in the 8-team playoff. So I think it's going to be a great game.
It's going to be a good one. The Rose Bowl is on, I believe it's New Year's Day, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, New Year's Day. By the way, I looked at the bowl slate this game, like, pretty much December 28th and New Year's Day. Just watch those days. The other bowl games, I think, suck.
December 28th, as Tyler was referencing, is the college football playoffs. And the final rankings are LSU number 1, 2 Ohio State, 3 Clemson, 4th Oklahoma. We're having a big show this Thursday, tentatively, so we'll be more going into depth. Are you satisfied with the top?
Am I on there?
Yes, of course you are.
Okay, I didn't know that.
What are your reactions? Is LSU top in the top of the country?
I think LSU deserved it. I think they, jumping off the top of my head, but I think it's, what, 4 or 5 top 25 victories, a resounding SEC championship victory. Their defense, which had been maligned, looked very good the last 2 weeks. I think LSU probably, they played the better game the last week of the season. I think Ohio State's very good. I think the first three teams are very good. I don't think Oklahoma's that good. I really don't. Oklahoma's fine. They're good. But I think Oklahoma could lose to Georgia. I think Oklahoma could lose to Oregon. I think Oklahoma, obviously, they almost lost to Baylor. Both those games they barely won. I think they could lose to Wisconsin. So I think the teams 4 through 8, 4 through 9, I mean, they could lose to Alabama. They could lose to Auburn. I think 4 through, like, 11, Florida. I think you take teams 5 through 11, they could all beat Oklahoma.
Including
so
Utah.
Oklahoma just happened to be the one team. They won their conference title. And, yeah, so that's why they got in. And they lost one game.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts was fumbling the ball a lot on Saturday.
He's honestly not played very well. I mean, I've watched Jalen Hurts play last several weeks. I saw him play Baylor. I saw him play against Kansas State. Obviously, I saw him play against Iowa State. He's had some bad interceptions. He's fumbled the ball a lot. I don't think he's played that well. I don't think he deserves an invite to the Heisman. I know Justin probably just like me here, but I don't think he's played well enough. I don't think they won the game because of him. I think their defense played pretty good. And they ran the ball pretty good. I don't think he. It doesn't really matter who gets invited to the Heisman, anyways. Joe Burrow's going to win it. Like, who cares? But anyways, I think LSU wins pretty handily over Oklahoma. I think they're just better, and I think it's a great game. Clemson against Ohio State's great, but I got to remain. I think Ohio State's just a little more talented. I think Ohio State's played better teams, so they're a little more battle tested. I think Ohio State beats them. I think it's Ohio State and LSU for the national title.
There is talk that Clemson could upset Ohio State.
Well, it's not an upset. They're favored.
Are they? Wow, I did not read those reports.
It's technically. I mean, it's so close that it's not an upset either way. It's close to a pickup. It's like
they're pretty even.
But it's not, yeah. Well, it's because they're a defending champion, and they have looked very good. I'm sorry, though. Their best team they've played is Virginia, and Virginia – can we talk about the New Year's Six bowls now? I love, for the most part, the New Year's Six matchup. I love Oregon, Wisconsin, best game other than the playoff game. Baylor versus Georgia, second best game other than the playoff game. Memphis versus Penn State, that's definitely the best group of five team versus a team that, you know, is a top 10 team. Florida versus Virginia, I mean, Virginia, like, why did they do the conference tie-in? Like, I would rather see Florida play Utah.
Oof.
Or Florida play Penn State. Utah goes, or, you know, or Auburn versus, like, Penn. I don't know anybody. I Virginia is, I don't even know, like, they shouldn't have even stayed in the top 25. I know what the committee does, and if you notice, I did our top 10, and a couple, Krista And
some disagreements. Not too bad.
No, but you know what? I was thinking the same as the committee. You don't penalize teams for losing conference title games. And the only team that deserved to get penalized was Utah because they had not beaten any top 25. The only top 25 school they had played the whole year up to Oregon was USC, and they lost. And so then they lost by a good amount to the other top 25 team. They deserved to get penalized because probably they were rated a little high. Everyone else, you can't drop Baylor for losing in overtime to a team that made the college football playoff. Georgia had three top 15 victories and was in the SEC title game. You can't drop them. Who else is it? Virginia, man, they lost by 50. Whatever. Keep them in. And then, we can't drop Wisconsin for losing by 13. And covering because they were 17-point underdogs to Ohio State. Like, some people thought that Wisconsin was going to drop below Penn State. I'm like, they're not going to do that. Wisconsin won their division. Two of their losses were to Ohio State. One, they were leading for a good portion of the game. I mean, so, yeah, I that's why I kept it. I'm going to keep the teams that played in the conference title games. And then I picked Florida. I thought Florida, even though I probably could have gone with Auburn, to be honest with you. Auburn had two top 25 victories. Well, Auburn had two top 25 victories.
Yeah.
Auburn had two top 15 victories. So, and they lost the number one team by 3 points. That was the closest game for LSU. So, yeah. Anyway.
Let me read you the...
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Where are you reading me?
I'm going to read you, for the audience, the New Year's Six games. Penn State versus Memphis.
Cotton Bowl.
Penn State, Memphis, Florida, Virginia, Oregon, Wisconsin, Georgia, Baylor, and of course the college playoff games.
Sugar. Oh, yeah. So I was just naming where.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Baylor versus
Sugar Bowl is Georgia, Baylor, Rose Bowl, Wisconsin, Oregon, big one. Orange Bowl, Florida, Virginia, and Cotton Bowl Classic, Penn State, and Memphis.
Like I said, I like the three. I hate the Florida-Virginia game. But it also falls on a weird day. It falls on the 30th. So it probably is a game that, I guess, if you're going to have the most marginal matchup. But I feel bad for Florida. Florida's a good team. They're just not going to get a lot of credit by beating Virginia. So.
And Alabama plays Michigan in the Citrus Bowl.
Well, like I said, the New Year's Day. Okay, so the New Year's Day slate is Alabama versus Michigan. That's a great game. A couple of blue bloods. You have Minnesota versus Auburn. That's a pretty good game. Two top 20 teams. And you have Oregon versus Wisconsin, top 10 matchup. And Baylor versus Georgia, top 10 matchup. So New Year's Day, that I like it that way because I'm a traditionalist. That is a very good full day.
Early signing period is a new national signing day. And programs nationally are treating it as such. 65% of prospects nationally inked early in the 2018 cycle, and that number jumped to 77% this year, 2019, per 247 Sports data. Coaching staffs want the hay in the barn, so to speak, with the early signing period for the 2020 class right around the corner, December 18th to 20th. Consider this your primer as things begin to pick up. Tyler, what are your expectations for early signing?
Well, I love this period. I've obviously followed early signing day really closely for the last, like, 5 years, 6 years. Well, really closely for the last four, and the last 6 years I've followed it pretty good. And then, obviously, early signing day, it's been the last 3 years. Like he said, I think it was 65% the first year. Last year, I think, was 77. And I think this year, I think you're going to get about 80%. I think about 80% of guys sign. So you'll only have 20% left. So 4/5 of the prospects in the early signing period. The blue bloods, the tradition, the guys you think of are going to really lock in great classes. Right now, 4/7 composite. The class is Clemson. Number two is LSU. Number two is Alabama. Three is LSU. Number state. Number five is, I think it's Texas A&M right now. I'm not looking at it. I'm driving. And then you got like Georgia's six. I think Texas is seven. Auburn eight. 9 is Oklahoma. No, Florida. Florida. Oklahoma's 10. My boys, the Ducks, are 11.
Ooh.
And then I think if you go out to a little farther, I think it's like 12 is Notre Dame, 13 Michigan, 14 Penn State, 15 Washington, 16 North Carolina, and I think maybe Tennessee is about 17. So, yeah, I like to say, you know, if you go by the 247 composite, obviously the playoff teams are in. Ohio State is number 2, most talented roster. LSU is number 5. Clemson is number 9. Sorry, Oklahoma is number 8, and Clemson is number 9.
Wow.
So in the 5-year sample size of baseline talent, you still do not have a team that's not in the top 25. Still, there has not been a team that's made the college football playoff, so 0. Outside the top 10, only 6 teams. So 14 of the 20 teams in the 247 team talent composite era have made the playoffs. So the best chance for your team to make the college football playoff is to have top 10 talent. Top 20, top 25 is reasonable. You can make it. But you got a better chance if you're in the top 10. So I think really shooting for those top 10 classes. My Ducks, we right now have, like I said, the number 11 class. We had a number 7 class last year. We were number 13 the year before. So coming off a top 10 and a top 15 class. We would have to knock some big guys. We'd have to get some big guys to sign in order to get a top 10 class. And we have to keep guys from flipping. I feel actually better that we get some higher rated guys than I do about not guys flipping. I think there is going to be guys currently committed that are going to flip. Johnny Wilson, who's a top 100 wide receiver, I think he flips to Arizona State.
Wow.
I think Miles Slusher, who's a 4-star that's committed to the Ducks, he has been flirting with Nebraska and UCLA for some reason. I wonder if he ends up signing with the Ducks. Avante Williams, top 100 safety. I would watch Florida for him, maybe even Georgia. Ducks might get him, though. I think they feel a little better about him than the other two. But the good news is I think Oregon feels pretty good about the number 4 rated player in the country, Justin Flo. He's been a long-time Clemson lean, but he visited Oregon last, and some rumblings he might want to stay home. He's taken an official to USC. He's a USC. I think his dad went to USC, to be honest with you.
Uh-oh. Good chance.
But USC does not – they're not in a great trajectory of the program. I mean, they kept their head coach, Clay Helton. If you saw a couple articles, 247 did an article yesterday about how Oregon is possibly going to go on a Pac-12 dominance run. And I do think it's possible. Ducks won the Pac-12 this year. They landed the most talented class in 2019, second most talented class in 2018. They currently have the number 1 most talented class committed. If they are able to knock Justin Flo, they're also in the top 2 of 5-star Kaylee Ringo, the number 8 rated player in the country, and the number 77 rated player, top 100 cornerback Dante Manning. They're also in the top 2. And there's also rumored that there's a couple guys that are currently committed to other teams that might flip. I would keep an eye on Trayshawn Holden. He's committed to, did it make sense, Justin Riley's Bama Crimson Tide. But I think he might flip from the Crimson Tide, and it could be Oregon. The other one would be Arizona State for him. Also, Jermaine Burton is committed to LSU, took an official visit to Oregon. He's another guy to possibly watch out for. So if Oregon, and he's Mario Cristobal, I was a little hard on him, but there's one thing. He's a hell of a recruiter.
I know.
He was the 2015 Recruiter of the Year by 247 Sports. He landed a top 13 class despite being the interim coach turned head coach. He still landed a top 15 class in 2018. He landed a top 10 class, number 7, despite coming off only a 9-4 season. I mean, he has recruited well above his team's record the last 2 years. So the fact that he now has a team that's number 6 in the country and just won the Rose Bowl and flirted with the college football playoff, you have to think, if I had to predict, just going off of what I know of him as a recruiter, and I think he lands a top 10 class. Even if a couple guys flip. And he's also good with the portal. Transfer portal, you know, he landed Juwan Johnson, the former blue chip guy from Penn State as a wide receiver. He landed Dallas Wormack, who used to play for Alabama. He landed Devin Williams, the top 50 player that transferred from USC. He landed 2 years ago DJ Johnson, a former top 100 player that was with Miami. I would look at him to land a couple guys in the portal. I would keep an eye on Justin Shorter, who is currently in the portal. He's a former five-star from Penn State. I think he might land him. And there's some rumblings that he might get a quarterback. And depending on who's out there, there's a guy, I think of his name, but I'm not going to say who it is because he hasn't entered the portal yet. But he might not go to the NFL draft, is the rumblings. And I think he could land with Oregon.
Wow.
And he's pretty good. Let's just say if he went to the NFL draft, he'd be drafted in the first three rounds.
He's that good.
So, yeah, so I would say I think he lands a couple guys in the portal. I think he lands one of these five stars. I think Oregon lands about a top 10 class, probably in the – I'd say the ceiling would be about 8, and the floor would be just outside the top 10 at like 12. So like an 8 to 12 range, which still is a very good class.
Any hope for Manny Diaz with the Miami Hurricanes? Anything you heard from that end?
Well, he is, once again, I call Oregon the closest, but I know other teams. Diaz is the number 14 rated class right now, which is pretty good.
Wow.
I mean, coming off of not a – well, I forgot. Yeah, surprise team. I forgot to add Miami. They have the number 14 rated class.
That's a good sign.
I don't think they're necessarily trending with anyone, but the good news is, is they have the number 14 rated class.
Hey, I'll take it.
So even though they're not trending, if they're able to get the signatures of all those guys, you know, probably land a couple other guys. They could look at possibly a top 15 class. I could see them land the top 15 class. And remember, they had a couple really good transfers last year. A guy like Jalen Phillips, the former five-star from UCLA, he had to sit out this year. And then, you know, Bubba Bolden ended up actually playing, transferred from USC. So I think that Miami will probably have a top 20 talent roster again next year. And who knows? Maybe they can get things going a little bit. I think they'll have enough talent to be – I mean, ACC is garbage. So I think he can turn it around.
Yeah, which is one of, like, the main things he says in his first press conference when he became coach, recruiting. He mentioned recruiting big time.
Yeah, and after coming off a 6-6 season, to have a number 14 rated class, that's pretty good. I mean, that's not bad.
Doing the grunt work.
I mean, that's not bad.
Well, early signing is in December 18th in 10 days. So we'll have Tyler on probably on early signing day, and we'll discuss what's happening, any flips, any surprises, but we'll see what happens when that day comes. Anything else before we head into game predictions?
No.
Let's do it. One big game this weekend is Army versus Navy.
Navy's better this year. Go Navy.
By far. And tonight, the Giants at the Eagles.
I think the Eagles, they're playing for a playoff spot, so they need to win this game. So, Eagles.
I was reading something about the Oregon running back coach might get a coach offer somewhere.
He might. I actually think there's a better chance that Oregon offensive coordinator, he's one of the finalists for UNLV. I think there's a better chance. I don't know. I know that Cal Poly is where they're considering Jim Master. I don't know if going from being the run game coordinator at one of the best Power 5 schools to being an FCS coach is something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of, you could possibly be taking a pay decrease.
Any more coaching changes in Oregon or not much?
Oh, well, I think Oregon will have a couple assistants leave. Like I said, I think Marcus Arroyo might get a non-Power 5 head coaching gig. And there could be another guy. I'd look for Keith Hayward, who's the co-DC. He could get a main DC role somewhere. maybe even like USC. So I could possibly, and also Oregon State and Washington State have openings at defensive coordinator. So I'd maybe look for him there. I guess Washington State opening, I'd maybe look for Ken Wilson, who's the linebacker coach for Oregon. He was the linebacker coach at Washington State. So they have an open defensive coordinator position. Could they go after Wilson for it? It's possible. So yeah, that's a couple little openings here and there.
And your thoughts about Lane Kiffin going to Ole Miss?
That's a pretty good hire by Ole Miss. Hopefully Lane can keep it straight. You know, Lane had a tumultuous career, but hopefully he can keep it straight, and he's learned from his mistakes, and somehow he can be successful there.
Any word on the Arkansas job?
Yeah, they hired the offensive line coach from Georgia.
That's right.
What's his name? Sherman?
I think Sherman. And Norvell is going to FSU.
Novell goes to FSU. Missouri gets Eli Dishwitz, or whatever his name is. So bad his name. From Appalachian State. USC keeps Clay Helton. Chris Peterson leaves. Jimmy Lake, his defensive coordinator, took over. I don't know. I don't have anyone else off the top of my head.
Was that a huge, huge price for FSU to get at Norvell?
That's pretty good. I think that's a pretty good hire. I mean, the guy's done pretty well at Memphis. I think they went really big after, like, Bob Stoops and stuff, and it didn't work out. And so they decided, you know what, let's just go with the best, not Group of Five coach, and that's probably Mike Norvell. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty solid hire.
Comment from an Alabama fan: if Tua comes back, does Bryce Young stay?
I mean, the only place that Bryce Young would go other than Alabama, where he was for Alabama, and is USC. And I just don't, like, why would he go back to USC at this time? I just don't see it. That Tua's not coming back.
You don't think so?
No. He'll keep on, I mean, he's just not. Why do they keep on talking about it?
Why would he?
He's drafted in the first round. He can't risk getting injured. No, he's not coming back.
I believe you, Tyler. You know the hunch. You know the heartbeat.
I would be willing to bet money on it.
You should.
No, I'm not really. I don't bet money. Okay. But if I was someone that bet money, I would be close to betting money on that.
David Ramsey is against gambling. Dave Ramsey.
Yeah, because Dave Ramsey's playing a thing in, for sure.
Tyler, what is the best way to reach you to talk to you about C.J. Verdell's performance?
At TurnerCast.
And, of course, you can reach us at thesportscast.net or on Twitter at thesportscast1. We had full live tweeting. We tweeted three games this past weekend. I think it's a record. Plus the Ravens game, so that's four games. So it was really exciting weekend. Oklahoma game was really exciting. Oregon as well. And, of course, the LSU-Georgia, which was pretty much a blowout, but we live-tweeted that. And, of course, keep in touch. This Thursday is the big show, 6 p.m. We have Ty Turner, Justin Riley, possibly Brian Glaze, to talk a little bit about his perspective, his analysis on certain teams and conferences. Well, Ty Turner, always a pleasure to join me on a Monday afternoon.
All right, thanks, bro.